coming to you here on WEFT Champaign, as well as WEFT.org.
And again, we thank all of our listeners, donors, contributors, community partners that helped keep WEFT viable and on the air.
Stay tuned for this pre-recorded episode aired first on September 2nd, 2024. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Annie Bruno of the Ligas Family Advocate Program. But first, disability news for September 2nd, 2024. Newly issued guidance from the U.S. Department of Education's Rehabilitation Services Administration says that vocational rehabilitation in the states should pay for out-of-state services, including post-secondary programs for those with autism or intellectual disability, if comparable choices cannot be found within that state. The document also says that if a person currently receiving services from vocational rehabilitation is seeking services identified in their individualized plan for employment, the agency should accommodate an out-of-state option if no in-state option exists. Officials say also said that programs that people with disabilities might want to access out of state may include post-secondary programs designed for the specific needs of students with autism or intellectual disabilities, or residential training centers for those who are blind. Out-of-state programs may also be required if a course of study or degree needed to fulfill a person's employment goal in their individual plan isn't available in their state. In addition, if a person with a disability has been accepted to an out-of-state college or university that would better prepare them to become employed in their chosen field, the state vocational rehabilitation agency should support that option. 17-year-old Gus Walz, son of Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz, has become one of the most high-profile people with nonverbal learning disorder. Gus is one of millions of Americans with that diagnosis, according to a 2020 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association Network Open. 3 to 4% of children and adolescents in the U.S. may have it, and another study this year in Scientific Reports said that prevalence in children may be almost 8%. The condition, known as NVLD, does not yet have a clinical definition. It's characterized by a gap between verbal abilities, which are normal, and nonverbal kinds of learning involving visual spatial processing, like telling time on an analog clock, reading a map, or balancing a budget. Disability and spatial awareness can affect motor skills, causing clumsiness or problems with functions like tying shoes, using silverware, and handwriting, according to the NVLD Project, which is a nonprofit working to have the condition added to the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. According to Scott Bazilko, who works with neurodivergent students as executive director of Winston Preparatory School, NVLD is like the opposite of having dyslexia. He says that reading is not a problem for kids with a disability. They often have a large vocabulary and can recall facts and memorize things like multiplication tables. Learning for a student with NVLD could become more problematic with schoolwork requiring the student to notice patterns and apply concepts. That can cause problems with reading comprehension and advanced types of math problems. Some features of NVLD also overlap with those of autism spectrum disorder. People with NVLD may be socially awkward, but because they don't recognize the meaning behind facial expressions, body language, and other nonverbal forms of communication. They may compensate by asking a lot of questions, which can appear annoying. Comedian Chris Rock said that when he learned as an adult that he had NVLD, it explained a lot of things from his past. Rock said, quote, "I kind of had a hard time with nonverbal cues with people. I always have. They say 70% of communication is nonverbal. So my relationships, even with my family or women I dated or whatever, there was always something a little off, and I couldn't put my finger on it," end quote. Despite all of the challenges, NVLD does not affect intelligence, and people can learn strategies to compensate for their limitations. The Walls' say that Gus is, quote, "brilliant and hyper aware of details that many of us pass by. What became so immediately clear to us was that Gus's condition is not a setback. It is his secret power," end quote. And finally, Carrie Legidol, an advocate from Central Illinois, is leading a national effort to ensure people living in long-term care facilities know about their voting rights. Legidol's son, Lynn, lives in a long-term care facility that actually helps residents register to vote and cast ballots. The Americans with Disabilities Act prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities in every area of public life, including voting. They have the right to access polling places, voting equipment, and other voting-related services. However, there are still 7 states that ban people from voting for themselves if they have a legal guardian. The federal government has said this is a violation of voter rights, but Congress has not yet addressed the issue. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander. I'm joined today in the studio by my good friend Annie Bruno. We've known Annie for a long time and in many roles through the years, even though she's quite young. I'm surprised she's had as many different responsible positions in disability world as she has. But right now, and hopefully for a long time, you are the parent advocate for the Ligas consent decree for Central and Southern Illinois. That's a pretty big area, ain't
it? Is.
Annie. So
it is.
You have to do a lot of traveling in that?
Not so far. I mean, somewhat. I went down to Carbondale for a great conference down there with the Autism Society of Southern Illinois. So I'm traveling a little bit. Mm-hmm. Happy to travel more. I do most of my work over the phone or virtually with families as the family advocate at the ARC.
Yeah. Yeah. So acquaint the listeners a little bit with who you are. If they haven't heard you being interviewed before, they may not know.
Well, as Vicki joked, but not really a joke, I have held a number of different positions locally in Champaign-Urbana. I've worked at Community Choices, and I've worked at the Autism Program, and I was a supervisor at Regional Planning Commission before they closed their ISC department. And now I'm at the ARC. I am a licensed clinical social worker as well as a QIDP, Qualified Intellectual Disabilities Professional. And so I've kind of got a unique double background in trying to work with families and work with folks navigating this very complex
system. Well, it's a huge skill set that you have that is, in my mind, a perfect fit for the job that you're in right now, because those are all things that parents say, I never heard of any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this stuff is. How do I know what's good, what's going to work for my child if they get one of these letters in the mail?
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a program of the ARC of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Just for people who aren't familiar, what are the other things that the ARC does?
Yeah, well, I'm so happy I landed where I did, because it's an amazing organization. The ARC of Illinois is one of many chapters of ARCs across the United States. There's an ARC of Iroquois County. There's an ARC of United States. We're the ARC of Illinois. And so the program focuses can be different at different chapters, but we are mostly an advocacy organization, and we're statewide. I'm like, you know, one of the few south of I-80, but I'm happy to, I'm proud to be representing Central and Southern Illinois. My program is really designed talking with families about how to navigate the system, especially and particularly when waiting on the PUNS wait list or navigating a PUNS selection letter and trying to get into services. So that's mostly what my focus is. But we have a number of great programs. One that comes to mind, our bigger program, is called the Lifespan Program. And the Lifespan team are a set of, I think, four staff members who are spread out throughout the state and are really like, I've heard one of them describe themselves as a generalist. They are trying to get you connected with resources. They have a helpline. You call in, you say, I need IEP support, and I'm in Macon County. And they will pull their strings and do their research and get you connected to folks. So that's one program. We do a lot of trainings and education. I ran into you, Vicki, at the ARCS annual conference, which is in May. And so we offer a lot of trainings. We have an assistive technology grant, and we formerly had a consumer stipend program, which I'm hoping will be up and running again. But that was allowing folks to attend conferences and stuff with financial support from us. So there's a variety of what we do. And we just got a new executive director that started, Miss Samantha Alloway. And so she's now leading the ship, and it's an exciting time.
Samantha's going to be on the show next week.
Oh, wonderful.
So there you go. We just made that arrangement today. So I'm looking forward to meeting her.
Wonderful. She's great.
Yeah. So the reason you're here today, the main reason you're here today, is because the Department of Human Services and the Division of Developmental Disabilities, they're going to release a number of letters to offer the possibility of services to families around the state. Mm-hmm. So what do you know about this?
It's an exciting day for a lot of folks. The division has announced that they will be issuing 1,513 invitation to apply letters. Mm-hmm. That's how we term it, because folks mistakenly sometimes think that means you're in services already. You're not quite there. You've got a bit of a road ahead of you, but it is exciting. The invitation to apply letter is going out to families today. In that letter, they'll have information on next steps, but the main big thing anyone in possession of a letter is aimed to do is, one, I'd love if they consulted with us, the Family Advocate Program. We offer free consultations. But more importantly, probably, is your gateway to services, is your independent service coordination agency. And there's, I believe, seven of them across the state, locally in our area. That's Prairieland Service Coordination. And so you're going to want to contact them, because ultimately they're the folks that are going to get you through the screening process, the pre-admission screening, and into services.
Right. And if you've been on the wait list for a while, you know that this is a rare opportunity to actually get services for your family member. So once a person gets this letter, what is the process like? You said contact the ISC, contact Prairieland. Then what?
Yeah. Well, you're right in saying it's, I kind of call it the golden ticket. It's a very wonderful opportunity, and I would discourage folks from turning it down without a lot of thought. It is a bit of a time-consuming project to get into services, but when you connect with your ISC, Prairieland, they're going to want to work with you and your family to gather a bunch of information about the person with the disability who's been invited to receive services. You'll probably go back and forth. You'll get some assessments. You'll get a physical exam. If you don't have Medicaid, you're going to want to get Medicaid in place, because that's what pays for the program. The representative at the ISC agency may do an ICAP and a personal plan. Those are, you know, a variety of pretty in-depth assessments. So you're doing a bunch of documentation gathering, and you should expect a number of meetings with your ISC. You know, it can take time. A personal plan is usually 12, 15 pages, and it's in depth, and it's a lot of questions because they really want to know about you.
So you have to, in essence, you have to go through these assessments to prove that, in fact, your child or you as a person with a disability qualify based on several different factors. What are the factors?
Well, it's all laid out on DHS's website. The Department of Human Services has very specific criteria. Mainly, they want to ensure that you either have a diagnosis of an intellectual disability or a related condition, and you need some additional support in a variety of life skills areas. I won't go into the nitty-gritty about the details, but they're generally trying to both prove diagnosis through a variety of assessments, like a physical exam and a psychological evaluation. And then they're also trying to demonstrate that you need these services and that you want them. And so that's more where kind of the personal plan would come into place, is you're sort of talking about the areas of your life where you do need support and you would benefit from these services.
Okay, so when you get through all of that and say you have, okay, you qualify.
Okay, you qualify. You now have to identify what services do you want? And a secondary quick follow-up question, what services are available in your area? Because that's also quite challenging in some areas of the state. So you're looking at pursuing one of two main roads. Do you want, you know, in-home support where your family is managing the services and you're kind of purchasing different options a la carte? That's what we call home-based. It's a very brief description.
Or, we can go into further discussion.
It's a lot.
It's kind of, yeah, that's one
option.
Bucket.
And then the other option is what we call CILA, Community Integrated Living Arrangements. And this is more your typical group home, 24-hour support. I kind of think of it more as an all-inclusive. They're going to, you know, ensure your care. But there are some unique arrangements under that funding as well that aren't, you know, your very typical group home that we're picturing. So there's a variety of services available to you, but it's really a matter of...
Theoretically.
Right. It's a matter of what's available in your area, who has wait lists, who has capacity, what's right for your family right now, what's right for your family in 10, 15 years may be different. And you can switch, which is also
I was going to ask that question. At one point, very early on with Liggett's consent decree, they said you had to choose one or the other. And if you chose one option, then you were eliminating the other completely. But they have gone... They've changed that.
Yeah, when I first started working at Regional Planning as an independent service coordinator, we would have folks that were in services and simultaneously waiting on the PUNS wait list. And that has since changed because the division, it didn't make any sense to any of us, but the division had said, if you want to switch services, you got to wait and be pulled a second time off the PUNS to apply for those new and different services. I can't remember the year, probably 2018, 2019. There was a change from the division that said, if you are in services, you have a right to move around within those services based on your personal need and if it's increased and if we can demonstrate that you need a different service and the availability of those services.
Yeah, because it's always been true that if somebody lived in a group home, they could move out and go to a different group home if they found the opportunity to do that and wanted to do it.
Or bump down to home-based if they went and lived with family or something.
Right. So what is the group home situation in Central Illinois?
I'm a little bit detached from the knowledge because I used to know exactly how many folks were in every group home as the independent service coordinator and supervisor.
Course,
I knew kind of where anything ever had an opening. But you know, things are tough. I've not seen a huge capacity for the amount of folks that are interested. You know, I have heard positive and good things about Marion County Horizon Center. They've recently kind of expanded into our area. They hadn't been.
They're in Rantoul right now.
Rantoul. Yeah, so there's a few more opportunities, but then, you know, you pair that with, I think CTF had one home here and they closed that. So things are always kind of evolving. Generally, it is very challenging for families to find a provider they like, a home nearby their family home, and have it be a good fit with roommates and genders and comfort level and support needed. It can just be a really hard matchmaker process.
And a very long process for a lot of
people. It really can.
And, yeah. And for people who are looking for, you know, this, who are getting older, mm-hmm. as we all are, and, you know, maybe in your 70s or 80s, and you, your family member needs to have that 24/7 care.
Right.
Trying to find it near where you live is going to be a real challenge.
Yeah, and we, you know, as best we can with, it's just the state of our state, and it's not a good thing, I don't think, but we kind of coach families to be okay with some concessions. Is it that you want an all-female home for your daughter? Well, there's only one, and it's 30 minutes away. You know, is that a better fit, or do you want the co-ed home that's in town? It's not, we just don't, as a state, have capacity for folks to have a whole lot of preference and choice, and that's something we're all pushing for and hoping will get better over the years.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of families who are sitting on those PUN selection letters, the invitation to apply, that are, you know, maybe finding home-based to be a better option now. I tell folks, if you really think Scylla is in your future, but there's nothing good right at the minute, you know, maybe consider going
take
to home-based. Definitely take it. Don't turn away the letter, but take it now and use the time you have to kind of matchmake yourself. You know, visit agencies, ask for tours if you can get a tour so you can get a feel for what different group homes are like. Become familiar with the providers in your area. Get educated, listen to trainings, attend webinars. We offer a free monthly webinar. It's called Know Your Options. We talk all about this stuff. What are your service options? How do you get them? What are some things to consider? And so, you know, that's available on our website, and it's free, and it's 1 hour long over the lunch hour. And so, you know, educate yourself and learn about your different options.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more. I think most people are familiar with the group home mm-hmm. model. And a lot of people say, well, that's where my child will end up as an adult when we're not around anymore. Or maybe even before that, because they want them to be independent, be in their own home, essentially. Home-based, I think, is misunderstood because mm-hmm. the home-based support services program, people think, oh, well, I don't want my child to live at home. Mm-hmm. They need mm-hmm. to be in their own place, and being at home is what we're doing now, so why do we need money
right.
for that?
Well, one, getting into home-based means you've gotten into the waiver, and that's important because that means you can switch to a group home whenever you are able to find the right fit and you're able to demonstrate that there was some increased need. So that's important to be in the waiver because, again, if you're not, you're kind of either sitting on the PUNS wait list or, you know, some people are using DRS home services and that suits them well. But, you know, if you're thinking you want a Scylla in the future, getting into the waiver initially is important. And the home-based program is, you know, I've worked in it for years. It's really flexible. And I think that's what families like. I don't necessarily think it has all the hours to support folks that are higher support need. but it is, it allows person to person to do it very differently. You know, you're picking kind of a la carte from a menu of options and you're finding the services that are a good fit for you. And those services can evolve and change. But you're picking, you know, I want a little bit of this and more of this. And then, you know, 6 months later, I decide I want to drop this service and pick up this service. So it is flexible and it can allow for growth, which gets me back to my point of if you, you know, are living in the family home and you think you can safely move to some sort of apartment or something, the home-based follows you. So if you can adapt home-based to fit your needs in various areas, you most certainly can live in an apartment with yourself or with roommates or with friends. And you can move even to another county in Illinois. You know, your services have to stay within Illinois.
You have to be with Illinois.
But you can, it allows, you know, young adult to get an apartment and mom and dad are going to go retire and move to a smaller house. Well, okay, they can still have home-based and mm-hmm. it can travel with them. And yeah. it's nice for that reason.
Yeah. So sometimes if a person is living in the family home and the parent is the only caretaker, then they would probably get, I'm assuming that it's, they get a check once, twice a month, paying them to take care of their family member and their individual needs. What if the parent isn't interested in doing that?
Well, sorry. The home-based program is nice because it allows you to hire you as a family member or whoever's supporting the individual is going to help manage the services. So that's sort of the disadvantage with home-based, right? Is you're kind of coordinating. And so if mom or dad wants to be involved but doesn't want to be the actual personal support worker getting money, they can serve as the employer, mm-hmm. which someone has to be designated as an employer. Sometimes the individual themselves can be their own employer. But the nice thing I think about home-based and its flexibility is that you could have one worker on your payroll or you could have 10. And it's a lot to coordinate with 10, but you can have someone that solely comes over on a Saturday night and watches a movie with you. And that's the only time they're with you. And maybe they do it once a month. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they just do it as an as-needed support. So it's flexible in that you can have a few different workers. But, you know, you are also managing the services, so you're also responsible for finding those folks.
Right, right. We do, in the Champaign-Urbana area, we do have a registry of personal support workers available.
A great
at
resource.
PACE. So that is an advantage for families who are going to be getting those letters as well.
Yeah, that's an excellent resource, and I'm happy to see someone's keeping a database and working with workers who want work.
Yeah.
Because sometimes workers work with one person and want to get connected with other families.
Absolutely. And I think that that's been a great resource. My daughter has home-based, and we have gotten recommendations from other people, and we've given recommendations based on some of the folks that we've hired over the years. So mm-hmm. it's great. Yeah. Encourage everybody who gets that letter. Who do they call when they get their letter? You call the ISC first.
Yes.
Maryland.
You call your Gateway to Services, your ISC, but everyone is also welcome to call the Arc of Illinois, and we offer free consultations where I can have this exact same conversation, but it can be completely personalized to what fits your loved one's needs.
Great. So contact information would be?
My email is Annie, A-N-N-I-E, at thearcofil.org. And email is best because then I usually follow up with a when should we schedule a call? Because I'm on the phone a lot of the day. So I like to set aside a time where we can really talk about your loved one.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like good advice. So you say the letters are going out today or they have arrived today?
I believe they went out today. So you should get a letter from DHS. And then we will also be sending a letter with all of our contact information if you want to schedule a consultation.
So put that lucky nickel in your pocket and carry it around for the next few days. Hopefully people will get selected. I would imagine that the 1,500 and how many?
1,513
are being selected. Most of them, of course, are going to be in the Chicago area mm-hmm. because that's where the people are. Mm-hmm. But they're probably going to be a dozen to 15, I would think.
At least, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the independent service coordination agencies are also provided that list of names. So they're aware of you, but you need to contact them. You need to reach out and begin the process.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Annie Bruno of the Ligas Family Advocate Program. We really appreciate having you in
thank
the
you.
Area for sure. Thank the ARC for, you know, hiring you down here to be so active with families. It's really great. So
thank you.
Anyway, we'll see you around next time.
Thanks.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.